bring the meeting to order at 6:07. Welcome, everybody. The first thing on the agenda would be a public comment period, which I don't see anyone from the general public currently present. So moving right along, what we have in our packet are the minutes from the board, the previous board meeting, which was November 17, 2016. So if we could take a few minutes to review them, and then we'll vote to approve the minutes.
I would move approval of the minutes as presented.
Is there a second?
A second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
The minutes are approved. Mike, agency report.
Very good.
Thank you.
Our next board meeting will be March 16th, 2017. In this room?
What?
March 16th.
Announcements for the minutes, and make sure this is entered on the minutes, that as of October 4th, 2016, Paul Ashton was appointed as chair of the Police Complaints Board. As of December 10th, 2015, the executive director was appointed to the Police Officer Standards and Training Board, which is a board within MPD to oversee the training and standards of new recruits and officers that are already hired through their in-service training program and through the recruit training program and their hiring requirements. That board is about to meet for the first time in a couple of years next week.
And Mike, remind me, is that ex officio?
I am a voting member.
You're a voting member?
Of that board.
Okay. Is that, you were appointed, I mean?
I was appointed by the mayor.
But it doesn't necessarily always extend. The mayor could appoint someone else, is my question?
Yes.
This is just a general appointment through Mona, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
It's not a
ex officio
position mandated by my position of the office here. I'm taking a regular appointed position. And I bring that up because I think it's going to be helpful for the Police Complaints Board and Office of Police Complaints, because we will have some input, and I can provide some input from our office and from the community as to what training standards should be, and the hiring standards and in-service training standards for the police department. So that meeting again will be, the first meeting for that board is next week, and we'll be watching what happens there. The other thing I want to make note of for the minutes is that tomorrow we will be participating in the March for Life. We've been monitoring that activity. We have two teams of monitors that will be out starting at 9:30 in the morning until the event activities are concluded. And we'll be monitoring for the First Amendment assemblies to make sure that the assembly is being conducted and being monitored by MPD in an appropriate manner. I also want to mention that Bobby Strang's initial partial term is expired. She is now serving as an extension until her reappointment. She has been reappointed by the mayor, and that has to go through the council appointment review process yet, and no date has yet been set for your council hearing body, if they are going to have a formal hearing on it. As of today, there's no date set yet. On January 17th, 2017, the Public Employee Relations Board, the PERB, dismissed two consolidated cases that were filed against the Office of Police Complaints by the police union. These cases go back to 2011 and 2012. Both of them are unfair labor practice complaints. One of them was with respect to a request that the police union had made for information about our procedures with our one-way mirrors and our interview rooms. And then the other one was with respect to our procedures for the use of cell phones by officers while they are being interviewed in our interview rooms. In both of those consolidated cases, the police union was alleging that we conducted an unfair labor practice by not participating in bargaining with the union and not participating with them and informing them of what our practices are and negotiating with them about those what those practices should be. And those complaints went through a long process of hearings and appeals over the last 6 years now, all the way up to the Court of Appeals in the District of Columbia. The Court of Appeals last remanded it to the PERB, to the Employment Relations Board. Based on the briefs that were filed on our behalf, those complaints, both of them, have been dismissed. And I don't anticipate any further appeals on them because they were dismissed both on their merits and on procedural grounds, and that their appeal had been waived because they had not they had not made an objection in a timely fashion much earlier in the case. But the board went on to dismiss the case on other grounds, including the grounds that we as an agency are not subject to the collective bargaining agreement with the FOP, and that we never were, and that no other agency is subject to it. So this has been a matter of contention with the police union and with this office for many years. We insisted on going to the Court of Appeals over some resistance from other agencies that in the government that were involved in this case with us. But ultimately, they did file the appeal on our behalf when we requested it. And we were successful in that appeal when it was remanded to PERB, and PERB ruled in our favor, which I was pretty confident was going to happen anyway. Just a question of getting to that point and going through all the procedural processes that it took. We have a good relationship with FOP. These cases originated many years ago. I think we have a different relationship with the police union than the office had in 2011. Lorne, I probably could give you an example just this week of that when it's your turn to talk about the statistics, Lorne, if you want. But I'm pretty confident that we're on a new road with the police union, regardless of who the leadership is at the union. We've really been trying very hard to reach out to them and work with them on a more cordial basis, because that's how things get done. So I wanted to tell you about that case because it is significant for the agency. I hope that issue and that claim that OPC is subject to the bargaining provisions and the collective bargaining agreement with the police union is finally put to rest permanently. Now I want to talk a little bit about the annual report, and I know all the board members have read it in intimate detail. But I'm just going to go and highlight a few things because I think it's important to know that and for our minutes. And I know you may not have the report in front of you, but the first thing I wanted to note was the increase in complaints that we had. And that's on page 2 of our annual report, if you were following along. We had 438 complaints filed in fiscal year 2016. It's about a 6 or 7% uptick in complaints over the previous year, but it's really showing a trend of over the last 3 years, we've had an increase of about 7 or 8% every year in our complaints. And the number of contacts we've got, which are not formal complaints, people calling us for information, instructions, information on how to file a complaint, information about police procedures, that's increased dramatically, almost 40% over the last 3 years. So that trend continues to increase. And we're going to talk about it in even more starker terms when I ask Mona to talk about the last quarter's statistics as far as number of complaints. So I see that is that trend over the last 3 years. And Matt, since you've only been here since Monday, I won't ask you to comment on it tonight, but I did not see a trend of 6 or 7% over 3 years as an overly statistically significant trend. But we are going to look at our last quarter and the last year, and Matt's going to be involved in this, although he's only finding out about it right now, about what, if anything, is contributing to that trend in increase in complaints. The budget office, I talked to them as recently as, 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
I had a meeting with the mayor's budget director, and I did inform them about this trend, and they are aware of it. And the reason I did that is because I'm trying to keep the budget agency aware of the idea that we may need to stay in to revisit our staffing levels for investigators if the trend continues, and if our agency is to continue with our present workload measures. So that's that. The other significant thing about that is that the close of the 2016, despite having all this increase in complaints, we had 110 cases remaining open, and that was the lowest number of case carryover since OPC started in 2001. And that's really significant, and that really shows how hard the investigators are working at keeping the caseload down in the office. Because if we can maintain that type of case carryover every year, we'll be in good shape, and we will not be headed for a backlog situation again. The other thing I want to mention about the annual report is it just mentioned in passing the impact of body-worn cameras. We're going to be doing something in the coming year much more detailed on the impact of body-worn cameras, working with MPD and the University of Arizona and some other partners in helping them. And Matt, you'll be involved in this too, helping them evaluate the impact of body-worn cameras on MPD and on our office. But it's already having an effect on what we do and how we operate with our investigators. And I think we've talked about it on other occasions. And when we get closer to that report, I hope to talk about it at one of these meetings in depth about the significant impact that it's having just on us. But as of December, though, we're pretty much in 100% deployment on street-level officers now. So for most of 2016, it was a pilot program, mm-hmm. with one or two districts and a couple other shifts working with it. So now we've really had to incorporate it totally in our operations just in the last month or so, now that they are on 100% deployment. So there'll be a lot more to be said about the body-worn cameras as we go forward. The other thing I want to call your attention to in the annual report is the failure to cooperate determinations. That's when an officer most typically is ordered to come into our office for an interview and does not show up for whatever reason. And on page 5 of the annual report, we talk about that. And you'll see that in fiscal year 2016, we had a significant drop in the number of failure to cooperate. We went from a total of 62 in 2015 to 29, half that, in 2016. So that was the fewest failure to cooperate in at least the last 5 years that we had looked at.
That's for a single interview?
Yes.
And then how many of those show up for the next scheduled interview?
What would you say?
Most of them. We have had instances of two failures to appear. MPD's good about progressive discipline in that,
mm-hmm.
where they'll maybe give them just like a 750, and then the next time, those are usually the ones you see on the chart where it has like a more... maybe a day suspension or something, because they do get the progressive. If you don't show up twice, then you're going to get disciplined both times, typically. There are occasions where they find out that they had an emergency or something like that, where they weren't served. It's not a lot. Most people will show up the second time. But there have been a few, I would say, of the 29, maybe five or less were second. Subsequent failure to appears.
So it's a very interesting number. Another interesting number is the number of complaints that were sent for referred for discipline in MPD. In 2016, 31 complaints were resolved that resulted in 25 complaint examiner decisions. That was over three times the number from the previous year, from the previous couple of years, really. It was the highest number in at least the last 5 years that we looked at, and it was double or triple the number over the last several years of each year. So there was we had a really significant increase in complaint examination cases that we referred for discipline. Part of that is because we were still dealing with backlog cases. So we had a high volume of cases that were being sent over there for it. And maybe there's some other reasons for that too. Maybe it's a result of other things within the office that we're doing, looking at cases from a little different perspective in some respects. I don't know, I can only hypothesize on it, but that's a significant number too. It's a very significant increase in cases that were sent. Already this quarter though, the trend is already leveled off to the previous year. I don't think I will not predict that we're going to have that many this year. But that's hard to say it this early yet.
So one thing I would be curious to know, since we did have quite a backlog that we went through in 2016, is how many of those 24 sustained cases were actually from previous fiscal years and not fiscal year 2016?
Well, you know, there were some older, in I think one of the next pages that gives the case numbers, so there was a couple, the last couple 13 cases, there was like one, I think 14. One or two, 14s, 15s, but the other thing significant about that grouping was that it was the first group, I think there were three or four that were body-worn camera cases, so they were also, even though it did have the backlog, it also had our first few cases ever where we were able to do the complete case, send it, and get them closed out even in a complaint examination situation in 6 months. That's never happened before. And that had a lot to do. Those were typically the body-worn camera cases or other cases we had video where we were able to really get through it quickly and get them out the door. So that was another thing. Yeah, we had some old cases in that list, but we also had some very new cases, cases that were only 5 months old, 4 months old, 6 months old. So we hope that's more the trend. I mean, currently we are current. I think we did have a 14 that finally settled out because an officer had been on leave for so long. Mm-hmm. That will technically be a closure in 2017. But other than that, it's all 16s. It'll be all 16 and 17s. There wasn't even any 15s left. So.
Good. The other thing I wanted to mention with respect to the annual report was. And I get asked this by community members all the time. That's why I'm bringing it up to you. If you were ever asked for it, on page 17, what were the most common allegations and complaints that we get in Office of Police Complaints? And the most common one is harassment. And the second most common is language of conduct. And you can break those down a little bit further with respect to harassment. The top three types of harassment that we get is a bad ticket, most commonly a bad traffic ticket, something related to a vehicle, a vehicle stop, and the third biggie is unlawful arrest. Those are the three types of harassment that we get. And then with respect to language and conduct, the big three there on language and conduct, the first one is demeanor or tone by a long shot, and then two and three are gestures or actions of the officer, and specific language. Excluding profanity, the way the officer talked to the person. So those are the big three elements of conduct. So if you ever ask that, it's harassment and language and conduct are the big main types of complaints that we see. So that completes my report on the annual report. Does anybody have any questions about that? The next thing I want to talk about is a report on our mediation program. And we want to give you just a Brief overview of fiscal year 2016 and the year-to-date first quarter for 2017. And Rochelle is going to give us that report, right?
Yes. So previous to September 2016, for the entire existence of the police Office of Police Complaints, we only ever had one vendor for the mediation program. So you know, now we're screening all cases for mediation. We refer it to the vendor, and they hold a mediation and try to resolve the misunderstanding or whatever the concerns are between the complainant and the officer in that mediation. We've kind of started looking at the mediation program more intensely last year. Mostly it initiated because of the funding that goes along with it. We actually pay the mediators for the mediation so that we can have experts from the mediation industry come in that have no governmental presence, no relationships to the situation, and they can really truly be a neutral third party for the mediation. And so when we started looking at that last year, one of the other goals with the mediation program and rebranding it was to expand and kind of put as many cases as we can through the mediation program in order to more directly serve our mission of bettering the relationships between the community members and the police officers. And so cost was a huge factor in that. So last year, between March and May, we did market research in the industry, the mediation industry in the district, and kind of found out that there's more of a pool of mediators and vendors that we can tap into other than just the one vendor that we had for the previous 15 years. And so we went through that process. We had preliminary meetings with the mediators, the mediator companies and the mediators, explained our goals, explained our mission, explained how we wanted to brand the mediation program going forward, grow it so it better serves the community members and the officers and building those relationships. And in September, we brought in a company called Keybridge Foundation. And since then, we now have one independent contractor and we have two other independent contractor mediation resumes in front of you. So the status of the program now is we have different pools of mediations. We have the previous vendor, who was the Center for Dispute Settlement, back on board under a new contract. We have Keybridge Foundation, which is a nonprofit mediation company, and then we're trying to gain and grow the independent contractor world so that we have this diverse pool of mediators from all different levels of expertise throughout the industry with their components. It also adds diversity to the pool of mediators so that the complainants can familiarize and be relatable to some of the different types of mediators in the office as well. That market research and where we're at with the rebranding of the program is now at a 50% less cost than it was before. So even if we grow the program to double it this year, we still will only spend the same amount that we did last year. So that was kind of a benefit that worked out from the market research. So we're going to keep trying to find different pools of mediators in the program to diversify it for the benefit of the community members and the officers. Those are the two resumes that you have in front of you. Those two mediators are actually part of the federal neutral sharing program. And so we tapped into that, met with them to see if we can get the resources from that, and they've made themselves available at the same cost that we have as company mediators. And so the other part of that is we've met with the union. Sometimes we get police officers that want their union rep present in the mediation, which kind of doesn't serve the goal. The goal is for everyone interested or everyone involved in the incident at the time to talk about the misunderstanding and what happened and how it made them feel. And when the officer has a union rep, it kind of disparages the balance and the freedom to have that conversation. So we've met with the union, you know, in this continuing court case about our involvement and whether we should comply with the union responsibilities. And the union agrees to the benefits of mediation without the union rep. So we've kind of crossed that bridge as well. We've changed a lot of our documents and our notifications to the officers, the document that goes to the officers about not bringing union rep and understanding the goals. We get a lot of feedback from our diverse pool of mediators now to kind of continuously make the program fluid in its growth to make it as best as possible. So last
year... Did we just get this verbally from the union, or is there an MOU?
Alicia and I met with the union rep and kind of told them, you know, we never talked to the union before about mediation.
Yeah.
So we wanted to let them know where we're at with mediation, see what they thought about it, let them know that sometimes we have union reps that want to be part of the mediation and talk to them about our philosophy, why that's not beneficial. And they agreed and supported that. Mm-hmm. So it was verbally. But if I have an incident with a union rep, they call that union rep in and talk to them about how mediation is beneficial. They need to be advising their officers that way. So we did have a verbal agreement. We're also getting that follow-through in practice.
Okay.
So it seems to be working well for the benefit of the officers to be advised appropriately about their freedom in mediation. And so last year in FY16, as it's reported in the annual report, we had 13% of our cases, the entire cases came into the office, 13% of those were resolved in mediation. The year before, in FY15, it was 11%. Mm-hmm. Hopefully this year it's even higher now that we're branding this mediation program and the different growth and expansion methods that I talked about. And then, of course, the financial impact that it will allow us to do that, to kind of grow it without being restricted by budget. So it's kind of an overview of how the mediation program has grown in FY16 and where we'd like to go in FY17.
Any questions on that? All right, thank you very much, Rochelle. The next thing I wanted to mention as part of the board report is that we sent out, since our last PCB meeting, as you already know, but we've sent out 3 policy reports. We're working on 2 new policy reports, blocking passage is one, and the other one is consent search procedures. And Alicia's not here tonight to talk more about it in detail, but those are 2 of them that we've been working on for quite some time, and I anticipate those coming out hopefully in the relatively near future. Our priority right now is to put out final reports on the inauguration and the Women's March monitoring, which I'll talk about in a second. The other thing that we are working with NPD on as far as policy and procedure is there when we refer a case for discipline through the complaint examination process, it's been noted for quite some period of time that the statute was not being followed by NPD with respect to notifying a complainant about what was going on, informing us about the process and the status of the case and the final outcome of the case and a few other things that were, and apparently it was a historical practice that these things were not going on. So in lieu of issuing a policy report, we informally asked NPD to try to fix those measures, and they have agreed to do that. And if that, in fact, continues, and we will monitor that, then we hope that this won't be necessary to have a formal board report on that issue. So. We do. So I want to bring that to your attention just to let you know that I try not to just rely on formal recommendation reports, but we do have a good informal relationship with the people at MPD and the command staff, and we are able to talk about things like this. And there is a new command staff in place at Internal Affairs now, and all the way from the assistant chief and the commander. In fact, 2 commanders and the assistant chief are all different now, just over the last couple of months. So this was the first issue we brought to the new command staff there, and they have been very responsive so far to our requests. So I wanted to call out to your attention. Now I want to go back a second and talk about the protest monitoring marches and give you a brief report about the Women's March, first of all, which occurred on January 21st. In preparation for this march and the inauguration activities, our staff went through several different iterations of training. Board member Bobby Strain was present for a couple of those board trainings. Two of them were in-house, and one of them was at the MPD Training Academy, where we had a joint training session with the Civil Disturbance Unit, and we familiarized ourselves with their SOPs, their equipment, and some of the other equipment that they had from previous protests, so we were familiar with their gear and equipment and their procedures. We formulated a plan, put together a written protest monitoring operational order. For Saturday, the operational order had 4 zones of 2 to 3 OPC monitors in each zone, working in teams of 2, in some cases working in teams of 3. Each zone was pretty much delineated by the compass, northwest, southwest, southeast, northeast, in accordance with where the personnel were located. And we deployed to those zones, and this is the same type of procedure that we use, by the way, for the inauguration. and the same procedure that we used all in preparations for tomorrow's march, the March for Life. So we do go through a pretty significant training, in my opinion, and a significant planning process in preparation for it. We have a supply of our own uniforms, so to speak, identifying uniforms that we wear, and different procedures that I won't go into detail right now. I can tell you that Bobby knows a lot about how we handle our communication during these events, how we interact with MPD, and how we, you know, just the internal operation. I'll be glad to talk more about it, or Bobby can tell you about it. But it's a much more intensive operation than you might imagine, because it requires a lot of planning in advance in order to do it properly, at least in my opinion. So for the Women's March, and I want to give you some general observations, and we are in the process of putting together a draft of an actual public report that I'm going to ask the board to review and approve at some point. The Women's March report, you will see that one first, because it's by far the simpler report to issue, and you may see that. Hopefully our goal is you're going to see that in within 2 weeks. All right. So I'm going to just make general comments and not list all of the information about it, because for both of these incidents, we have an enormous amount of information. A lot of video footage, a lot of still camera footage, a lot of notes from investigators. We have access to all the board, thousands, literally thousands of hours of body-worn camera footage. I've made document requests to MPD to receive all the documents that were generated during both of the events. And they've indicated that they're going to supply us with those documents, things like arrest reports, use of force reports, incident commander's logs, things like that, that are going to, hopefully we will receive those in time to help us with our report. But I have not received any of those things. So what I'm going to tell you, what I'm going to summarize in the next couple of minutes about both these events are based on our own personal observations, both mine and all of the monitors that were helping us, including our volunteer monitor board member. So the Women's March was, so that's the background of both of these events. The Women's March was, as you probably read in the media, was very well attended. In fact, I think it was, the amount of attendees overwhelmed MPD's resources. A lot of their resources were depleted because of what happened the day before. Many of the officers from the day before were working in excess of 20 hours on Friday, and were not available for Saturday for the Women's March. So some of the things we observed were an inadequate police presence at many of the pedestrian areas and traffic areas. It presented some public safety issues for emergency vehicle access. Some monitors made their own personal observations about medical incidents that occurred inside the rally zone of the Women's March, and emergency vehicles could not respond, and emergency personnel could not get to them because of the density of all of the people, and in part because there was no traffic direction, no MP, very little, if not any police presence. In fact, in one medical incident, there was one officer present in a very large area that, of high density people, and he was unable to control or make any type of movement for the emergency vehicle to access that person. So we did notice that. There were zero arrests made. We had zero complaints from that incident. We had three commendations from that incident on good jobs that were done by officers. And we had two people call us on contacts. And that's just so far as of 4 o'clock today. They have 90 days to file complaints, but as of now, we haven't filed it. None of our monitors observed any issues that would necessitate filing a complaint. One of the issues that will be a subject of the board report will be that officers were occasionally wearing garb associated with some of the groups that were marching. One of the things was one of the pink hats. And we have several reports, and we have some of our monitors actually observed different officers wearing the pink hats, which was obviously not part of the uniform and obviously not part of the SOP of the police department. So that will be part of the subject of our report. Overall, it was, for the nominal number of officers that that were present, any incidents that occurred were very well, were handled very well by the police department. and that's evidenced by no complaints and no arrests, I think. And that's also a direct result of the atmosphere of the entire event and the fact that it was a very, not just well attended, but everyone that was attending that we observed was had no violent tendencies, no tendency to create property damage, nothing like that was intended or occurred, and we didn't even see anything like that out there. So that's the Women's Day March. We'll have overall a fairly good report on MPD. We had a couple, I believe also we had a couple incidents where officers were not properly attired with their identification, but those were minor. On Friday, with the inauguration protest monitoring, we followed the same procedures that I previously described to you, although we had a few more people working. We started earlier and we went late that day. We had great cooperation from all of our monitors, really dedicated monitors that were out there for a long, long time, because we had a lot of events going on. I want to divide it up and make general comments, first of all, about what happened on the south side of the parade inauguration area, and then I'll talk about what happened on the north side of the parade area, and the area we are. On the south side of the area, there was very minimal activity that would require police presence. There were, at the checkpoints, I believe we did not have any protesters generally on the south side of the parade zone, south side of South Pennsylvania. We did not have bottleneck at many of the checkpoints because individuals were not seeking to block those checkpoints off. The primary incident we had on the south side was a group of up to maybe a couple hundred people went down to I-395, entered the vehicle traffic of I-395 and obstructed traffic and stopped traffic both north and southbound near about 10th Street, was it, Bob, was where it started?
14th, and they got off at 12th Street.
Okay, started at 14th
and
12th.
And they directed them off the off-ramp at 12th Street.
So even at that event, there was nominal police presence. There was maybe one or two police vehicles that were helping to stop the...
Protecting the protesters.
Yeah, protecting the protesters
keeping
from getting hit by cars. but there were no arrests made. The MPD was very restrained in that and assisted the protesters in moving them off of the interstate after a couple of blocks. In a relatively short, less than an hour's period of time. And there were no violent incidents and no property damage done in that. With respect to the north side, I'm sure everybody's familiar with the media reports. I wanted to call your attention to some of the things that we're still looking at, and I'm not making a definitive call on what's going to be in our report yet or not. I'm alerting you to some of the incidents that we're going to look at in the board report that we're going to submit to you to review when we get to that point. And they are almost all of them with respect to what happened in the area of Franklin Park. And I'll just list a few of them. One of them is the indiscriminate use of pepper spray and stinger grenades. Another one is the failure to warn personnel, bystanders, and protesters prior to dispersing gas and other non-lethal devices. One is exposing media, bystanders, and people like OPC monitors to the indiscriminate pepper spray and stinger grenade equipment that they were using without any prior warning. There appeared in some instances, another thing we're going to look at is there appeared in some instances that there was a lack of interdepartmental coordination between MPD and U.S. Park Service, and I think it was either Montgomery or PG County Civil Disturbance Unit and possibly Capitol Police. There were other units that were present that may or may not have been dispersing gas, utilizing non-lethal force, and appeared to be operating on a different rules of engagement than MPD was operating on, which is different from MPD's SOP and MPD's operational plan for the whole mission on Friday. The mission on Friday for MPD called for MPD's CDU unit to be the primary response unit to any civil disturbances, and that was not what happened. And that led to communication issues, and it may very well have led to some of the other issues that you read about in the in the media. Again, I'm making preliminary observations here based on personal observations and the observations of our monitors.
So the aforementioned, sorry to interrupt, but the aforementioned ones with the OC spray and steroids, is that a reference to MPD or?
That's something that we're still evaluating. It's in reference to MPD and in addition to these other agencies. And the fact that there was a interdepartmental coordination breakdown made it sometimes difficult, even right there. And people like Angela, Christian, and everyone that was here, Doug, Bob, even being just yards away, it was still difficult to distinguish who was who. And part of the reason was almost uniformly, non-MPD departments were completely unidentified in their riot gear with no identifying marks other than possibly a patch, which was hard to see unless you were on the right side and close enough. They had no badge numbers, no IDs, completely contrary. Most of the MPD units that we observed were properly attired. MPD even went to the extent of just before this event, a week before, they had received a new supply of their riot gear helmets. All of them are engraved with their badge numbers on the front of the, the badge numbers on the front of the and top of the helmet. So that was good to see with MPD, but the overall planning and response is going to be something that's going to have to be reviewed. Some of the things I mentioned.
So, Mike, is it possible that no MPD officer participated in any of these actions that you listed?
No.
There were some who did.
Yes.
But possibly other police forces or.
Yes.
And the ratio was unclear.
Right. Yeah. I will tell you, I saw mostly park police of other forces in this area around Franklin Park. I personally saw mostly park police.
Franklin Park a national park?
Yes.
Yep.
It is, yeah. Okay.
But a lot of this activity was not in the park. It was on K Street in the area 12th and L, 12th and K, and 13th. And in fact, after the beginning of the activity, the protesters conducted an initial rally in Franklin Park, but all the activity after that happened in the D.C. government streets outside of the park area.
So that's an example where there's a couple different uniforms and you don't know who's who.
So there might be issues also with direct supervisor control, both with respect to MPD and other departments. One thing we noticed was maybe there could have been better control over, more controlled arrests and identifying people that were directly responsible for violence and creating property damage. So there's issues with identifying actual perpetrators and who was arrested and who should have been arrested. In some cases, there was inaction of MPD officers at some of the gate entrances on the north side before the incident at Franklin Park started. At a couple of the gates, beginning at 14th Street, you may have been at 14th Street one for a while.
Yeah.
At least three of the north side gates had delays of 1 hour to 2 hours, primarily because protesters had blocked the entrances, and there was very little to no direct response by MPD to remove those protesters, so that literally 2 to 3 blocks long of people trying to get into the parade were prohibited from doing so for hours at a time. So there were some issues there. That's also a First Amendment issue, in which other people that are attending that event are prohibited from doing that due to a lack of action in some instances.
14th Street is not one of those locations, so just for the other board members.
All right.
Yeah, 14th Street was different.
Okay. And I mentioned also SOP and statute compliance. All of these things are issues of concern. Probably all of them are going to be beyond our direct purview to review on an individual basis. We do not have the staffing or the manpower or the resources as an agency to conduct an in-depth review of many of the things I mentioned to you. What we will probably be suggesting as part of our board report is bringing up these issues of concern and recommending that there be an outside expert consultant to conduct an in-depth after-action review on the actions that occurred there, to focus not just on MPD but all the other law enforcement agencies that were involved there, somebody that has the ability to do that, because I would not recommend or suggest that, even though MPD has indicated they will do their own after-action review, in my view that will be not sufficient, totally insufficient actually, because we also need to look at the interaction with all the other departments and their reaction. So I suggest that at this point that that's going to be one of the primary recommendations of our report when we get it finalized, and that we will look at some of these things that I've mentioned as examples that should be reviewed on a more critical basis. Other than the Franklin Park area, we observed, for the most part, very good reactions by MPD, restrained reactions. As I mentioned, sometimes overly restrained. We had a couple incidents of that we observed that could be construed as overreaction or excessive force. We've received so far, as of 4 o'clock today, we have 3 complaints from the incident, just 3. And that would include any that MPD received, because they are referring their complaints to us now. And as of yesterday, they had received 0 complaints through MPD about anything on Friday. Of those 3 complaints, 2 were excessive force complaints, and 1 was that there was ineffective crowd control by MPD. And so far we've received 14 citizen contacts that have not resulted in complaints so far, but they have 90 days to file a complaint.
How many was that?
3 complaints, 14 contacts. A good degree of the contacts, by the way, were people that observed what happened on the news or YouTube and wanted to make complaints or talk about incidents that they had observed on YouTube or other media outlets or social media.
Well, that's a new development.
just continue.
Okay.
Just to give you guys an idea of what it was like, the best way I can describe it is, at one point we were walking between different protests and a reporter walked up to me, asked me which way to the main protest, and I looked at him with kind of a deadpan and said, pick a direction, keep walking, you'll find a protest.
At any one time there were multiple, at one time I was aware of about at least 6 different protests on the north side in this downtown area, in addition to the Franklin Square activities. At the same time that was going on, I followed one protest of about almost 500 people that was being monitored by 2 Metropolitan Police officers. Mm. And they were traveling down 8th Street past the White House in front of that area and I Street. And they were completely compliant with all laws, and they were just marching down the street with only 2 officers necessary. This was almost at the same time as the Franklin Street thing. In addition to that, there were at least 5 other groups at any one time that had different protests going on in different areas of downtown, all the way from Union Station past the White House area. So it was a very complex scene for MPD to respond to and for us to respond to and to monitor it. It was a very challenging environment, so I don't want to undermine all the good things that we observed with MPD, again, our job is to help them do it better next time. So we will point out the good things that we observed in the report, but we're also going to do our best to help them to help them for next time.
I'm glad Bobby was able to participate. And I don't want to speak for Paul, but the next time you have one in warm weather, I'm happy.
There's one tomorrow.
You didn't catch the last part of that.
I will say, you're moving enough that you don't really notice the cold.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's worth the effort to do it.
I think it's probably very informative. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And if there's all kinds of videos on YouTube on different incidents that Mike even described here tonight, if you want to see, including the indiscriminate pepper spraying right here in Franklin Square. Because there's one particular incident making all the rounds in social media of an elderly woman and a guy with crutches being sprayed. which really kind of blew my mind when I saw the video and made me wonder what the full context was.
Right. Great. So I want to thank Bob, Aslan, Doug, Chris, those are the people here today, and Bobby, of course, for the people here today that were the monitors. You guys did a great job.
Much.
And that finishes my report on that. A couple other things I wanted to briefly cover. Press and media coverage. Most significant on that was when we put out our language and conduct policy, we received pretty good media coverage in the Washington Post and various other media outlets. The other primary media coverage we had was in the Washington Post when they did the feature article on police complaints, and they talked extensively about OPC and some of the cases we had. We've been working with the Post reporter for several months on that story. And when it finally came out, well, you read it. It is what it is. I think it was helpful to us, but it, like every short, you know, shortened version of the media story, did not tell the whole story. So we'll keep working on that. Staffing update, you met Matt already. Shantini Clark, maybe some of you have met Shantini. You met her. You're the only one that has not met her. She's the new investigative clerk, so you may very well meet her with
getting. She's the one on the memo
message.
That's in the mail, too.
Okay. District government contacts. One significant one there was one that former board acting chair, Kurt Vornderman, was instrumental in organizing. That was our meeting with the D.C. auditor, Kathy Patterson. She came here, and board member Vornderman was also here for that meeting. They're doing an audit on MPD surveillance investigations, and we're trying to help them with that audit. As late as yesterday, we were sending them some information as in response to one of their requests for their audit. So that meeting went very well. We have a dismissal schedule. I want to say thank you to the three board members present for really keeping up to date on the dismissals. It's helping us a lot to keep those dismissals moving. So there's the schedule right now. Kurt?
Okay.
You have the pleasure.
Okay. But everybody on the board has been doing a real good job, and I appreciate that. All right, page 7 of the board report, investigation status. Ms. Andrews, could you proceed, please?
Yes. Okay.
Mike, just before that, no offense, I have another meeting I have to go to. It's the first time in years I've been actually able to leave early. So if you don't, if there's no business,
so
you have to vote.
There is a vote you have
to vote for.
Yeah.
The meeting.
Yes.
Can we flip that around? Yeah, I'm sorry, Mike.
Oh, that's okay.
We take a quick minute to review the resumes of the meeting.
Does that need to, is that something that's on the recording or not?
Yes, these two resumes.
Yeah.
On the bottom
okay.
here.
Yeah, it's open meeting.
Okay.
It'll be recorded.
Yeah.
I've already reviewed them.
I kind of looked at them already as well.
Yeah, actually they work in my line of business, so I will.
Is there a motion to approve both Mayors Kaufman?
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
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 They are so approved.
Okay.
Interesting, they're both in Kaufman.
They live at the same
address.
And the same address.
Kaufman and Kaufman.
What a coincidence.
All right. Thank you. I'm sorry.
I know.
I'm sorry to take off.
Well, thank you.
Thanks.
I'm sorry. I'm tired. I'm a little bit flipped and I'm tired.
So the main highlights from the stats, I would say, would be that although our complaints received, you know, as Mike mentioned, we're trending up still. Just as of 2 weeks ago, we were up 45 complaints from the same, almost like a day earlier than last year. And then I didn't check today, but I know we're in the mid-170s today. So we're continuing about 10 a week is kind of what we've been doing. But the good news is the total open, we're only up 14. So we're keeping up with it. That's the main point I wanted to share. We are keeping up with it. Our contacts, of course, are continuing to really are up a lot as well. But we're keeping up, and that's really our goal. And we're also down to investigators, so hopefully in the next 6 weeks we'll be even. So even with being down to investigators, still we're keeping up. So we're hoping that once we're fully staffed, then we'll really be handle the increased new cases. And the only other thing I wanted to point out, if you look at closures by type, kind of made a few adjustments. We sent over our first few cases for, and divided up the referrals to MPD from the jurisdiction 90 days, which we've always had, and then now we have the new category, but it's still under referred to MPD as rapid resolution. So that's part of the NEAR Act. We've actually referred our first two cases for that. They close in our office. That's why they're in the closed type, but then we send us a different letter with additional information for MPD to meet with the complainant or to talk to the complainant, and it's kind of more of like a conciliation, give them more information to address their complaint. So it's a little more than just doing an investigation, but actually addressing it more directly with the complainant on those cases. So there's that. We also have, as you can see, closures with policy training and also more referrals. We have 5 pending policy training referrals at NPD. Now, those are different, so we send them later. They're cases that we would have maybe been ROIs where we really felt there was some misconduct, but more of not intentional. Like the officers just made a mistake or they just didn't understand something. So that's going to be a little different. But the difference is NPD has to let us know, send us back information showing that the officer actually participated in training. And then it's closed as policy training. So that's why there's some that are open still because they're pending. We're pending the training confirmation, mm-hmm. and then the closures are those that have actually happened and have been closed in this fiscal year for that purpose.
Great.
And those are both results of the NEAR Act. Both those new categories. Any questions? Oh, one other thing I wanted to say that's not on here that I talked about is that based on our first quarter, we closed 75% of our investigations within our 180-day time period. So that's continues. So that's just another indication we're keeping up with our cases. So that's before last year. Last year was the first year, 2016, the first year we actually hit our mark of 60%. And now but toward the end of second half of last year, we were in the 70s, 80s percentile, so that's good. So we're continuing. So just as kind of confidence that we're keeping up with the timeliness of investigations and cases, that's a pretty good number.
Going up to that, prior to that point, the typical number was 40% of cases. Mm-hmm. So it's almost reversed.
Last year, we hit our mark for the first time,
Now it's 75% of cases are being done within 6 months, and it's going to get better than that, too.
And that's just the cases that actually we investigate. That's not even, the referrals and stuff, so. Okay.
And the other significant number, I think, that you want to mention is the number of new complaints coming in.
Mm-hmm.
You'll see that.
So it's up about 40%. Yeah.
At least 40%, about 40% increase this time over last year. That's very significant.
Mm-hmm.
As well as the contacts, right?
Yeah.
Yes. And I don't account for, and Matt's making a note on this, which is good. Only a handful of those are accounted for, I think, from referrals from MPD, because as of now, last month or so, maybe at the most, MPD has indicated that they're referring all the cases to us now as they're required to by the statute. So many of these cases were not direct MPD referrals, but that's something we're going to dig into a little bit more, is where this increase is coming from and what's causing it, because 40% increase is a truly significant increase in the number of complaints.
Will we, Mona or Mike, will we be adding in a category so we can actually keep track of that?
We'll be able to keep track of where they're coming from. And,
okay.
Right.
We may not be here, but just for reference point.
You mean if they're coming from MPD?
Yeah. So that there's a better understanding of
the
contacts and complaints received. Yeah.
We're tracking that internally
to
see how it starts to shape out.
Okay.
And then we'll figure out how best to report it.
I know we only had 25 so far. And of those, a portion of those were cases that we did that the complainant had also contacted us directly.
Mm-hmm.
So not even all of those were new complaints we hadn't had.
Right.
So it doesn't account for all of that, but it probably does account for a portion of it.
I'm just curious.
Yeah,
tracking the impact
of that. Absolutely.
Right.
And And then, and even we have our the pending formals or the potential complaints, and we those are even up a little bit. So more of those are turning, plus we have less that are closing for no formal complaints. So part of it could be, too, that more people are actually falling through.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that happens sometimes. Those go, we have trend. I've seen trends over the 12 years I've been here of that, too, where there's, like, more people who don't follow through, more people who do, so. And it could even be the 90-day thing. I mean, that would be an interesting part, you know, impact, too. Where people have more time to, they realize, oh, it's day 50.
Yep. We're a combination of all this.
He's ready. He likes that. Stuff.
Any other questions on the statistics? That completes the board report.
I just have one question before we move to release everyone from this meeting. Have we heard any updates related to the MPD appointment to the board?
Last week I was informed that there's an appointment pending.
Okay.
And that's the extent of the information I have on it.
Great. And lastly, from a point of privilege, I will just take a moment to say thank you so much to the entire staff for all the work that you do. I've been on the board for over 2 years now, and I have seen the tremendous amount of work and the tremendous effort that the staff has made to reduce the backlog, because when I started, there was a huge backlog of cases, and you guys really put myself and the other board members to work in terms of processing those, so I really appreciate all the work that everybody does. And on that note, I move to formally end the board meeting. Is there a...
I'll second it.
Thank you. All those in favor?
Aye.
This meeting is now adjourned.
And the time is 7:10.